Back together again, you and I chatting it up midweek Wednesday style, the 19th of August to 2026, right here on Connecticut Today. We chatted about a recent survey looking at how many Connecticut voters view MAGA Republicans versus the Democratic Socialists of America, and which camp most Connecticut voters would choose if having to pick between one or the other. Hearst Connecticut Media's Dan Haar dropped by in the 5 o'clock hour for his views on the biggest state stories.
So I was poking around to see what we'd start the Mary program with today, and I found this, and this is more information being released from a recent poll amongst Hearst, Sacred Heart, and also, I believe, Channel 3, teaming up on this Sacred Heart poll. And a lot coming up in the program today, a lot more in the docket here. Dan Haar coming up, 5 o'clock hour as well, Hearst Connecticut Media. This is interesting. Housing cost concerns unite voters, and the MAGA label is more unpopular than the Democratic Socialist label. So, you know, you scroll down here and you get into this polling, and again, this is a Connecticut Insider, Hearst, Channel 3, Sacred Heart poll. And pretty much it goes according to form here, talks about the governor leading Ryan Fazio in the matchup for the gubernatorial election coming up in November. And then you scroll down to this. Other poll results show that political labels, Democratic Socialists and MAGA, had about the same level of support, which is interesting, right? Although voters by a 52.7, so maybe it's 53%, to 34.3%, 53 to 34 were more likely to say they oppose a MAGA candidate than a Democratic Socialist one. So, you know, I'm scratching my bald head here and I'm looking at this and saying, this is kind of interesting. Now, am I surprised at the gap here in blue Connecticut, where it's by far a bigger gap at 53 to 34 for the opposition to a MAGA candidate over a Democratic Socialist one? Well, no, not really when you come right down to it. But I got to thinking after this. Is part of the reason that where our politics, whether it's locally in cities and towns here in Fairfield and New Haven County, or statewide in Hartford, or all around the country vis-a-vis in D.C. and whatever, is all of this keeping us divided as a people with all this factionalism? And I know, yes, other countries are used to this. They have parliamentary systems or whatever. But as much as I sit here on this program and say, well, form your own party, or let's experiment, maybe, you never know, with a parliamentary system, is that the actual problem, that we don't have any unity when you think about it? And are these labels, and I know there is an organization out there, I think it's kind of a third party or third way organization out there called, No Labels. I don't know whatever happened to them. I know they were thinking of putting a third party candidate up in one of the election cycles. But having said that, is our desire to be on the far right, some of us, and the far left, some of us, is that really what's causing us to fracture here? In other words, aren't the MAGA candidates just conservative Republicans? Aren't the Democratic Socialist candidates just more progressive and left-leaning Democrats? And is it this factionalism? Is that even a word? I don't know. I may have made up something new. But is this desire for, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Maybe not so much a faction, but maybe a desire to curl up and cuddle up with our political friends? you know, a desire to really be in a sphere here of just hearing what makes us think that we're the right way, preaching to the choir, you know, perception is reality. Is that showing now in the fact that people are so chopped up about this? You know what I mean? And I know there's always been different caucuses and different, you know, ways of trying to stand out and really try and bring people together here in a party. But is this the thing that's really breaking us apart here? The fact that we are now so extreme in the right in some areas, hence the MAGA brand, and we're saying stuff like, you know, defund the police on the left side. And are we getting caught into, or are we getting caught up in stuff that just doesn't make any sense? Whether it's yelling about defunding the police, whether it's saying about getting rid of ICE on one side, or whether it's about, telling people they don't have to get inoculations against diseases, renaming bodies of water from the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. Are we so petty on one side or the other that this is just so working against us that maybe, I don't know, I don't like to think that we're approaching the point of no return? I don't think so, but you never know here. So what are your thoughts here? We have a lot of people commenting on this already. Several dozen checking in here even before we got underway here. At 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Who would you be less likely or more likely to support in Connecticut? A MAGA candidate or a Democratic socialist? And is part of the problem the label versus really getting into policy and saying, well, you know, that MAGA guy, I'm not necessarily a Republican, but he's got some good ideas. Or that lefty over there, that Democratic socialist, not really into socialism, but, or are the labels just putting up these, I don't know, artificial kinds of barriers here that are really causing us to be more and more bipolar politically? What do you think of this? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Or have we always been just caught up in the labels? So as part of our problem here that we're into labels too much, why do I ask that? Well, kind of interesting here, this more numbers released from a poll by the Connecticut Insider, the Hearst people there, Channel 3, WFSB News in Hartford, and, of course, Sacred Heart University. And one of the things in this poll is that voters by a 52 or 53 to 34% margin were more likely to say they opposed a MAGA candidate rather than a Democratic Socialist one. And I got to think, and I asked you people this question as well, who would you support versus not support, MAGA versus Democratic Socialist? But I got to thinking, why don't Democratic Socialists just run as Democrats? Why does it have to be a MAGA Republican versus just a Republican? Now, I know why. They want to separate themselves. But is this part of the problem that's really hurting our politics? Are we just too much into, and the word I couldn't think of before was tribalism. Do we just want to be with our tribe? You tell me. Let's start it off here. Jesse in Bridgeport. Jesse, hi. You're on WICC. How are you? Hello, Jesse. Is Jesse
can
there?
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Now I can hear you. Yes, go ahead. Yep.
I, too, would prefer to vote for a Democratic Socialist over a MAGA. And that's honestly because of their current representation.
Okay.
What I would say of a Democratic Socialist is that because they're still part of the Democratic Party, they would still have to deal with the Democratic Party. in order to get, and the Republicans, in order to get most of the things that they want done.
Yeah, yeah.
So for that part, if I can get away from the MAGA's current representation.
Okay.
And still work it out to get some of the things that the socialists are offering mm-hmm. done. Those are things that, to me, really can't hurt us, maybe benefit us in certain ways. And then certain things, like I said, won't be done because yeah. they just can't be done. They've never, they're just ideals that we like.
Yeah.
But they're just not going to happen.
And the reality of the numbers, too, where you have to push legislation and bills, and sometimes it just doesn't happen. It's just not there.
And there you go. So yeah. that, for that reason, to me, the socialists are no place near as dangerous.
Yeah.
As the MAGA party has shown to be. But again, I'm not a leftist or a rightist.
Okay.
And I really want the Democratic Party to understand something about their party.
Yeah.
And something that they need to understand is that the reason that the Republicans are currently in power is because some of the things that they offered as key things that they wanted to get done.
Yeah.
Number one, they've got them done.
Yeah.
Which shows a strength. Number two, they were things that we still wanted done, just not in the manner yeah. of which they're being done.
Yeah.
And I have a better idea of what immigration should look like.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand why I in Bridgeport understand how maybe this is better done than the Democratic Party, who also needs to apologize to their party for saying that they didn't want or don't want immigration reform. Mm. They should simply say that they do want immigration reform, just not in the way that it's being implemented.
Yeah.
And that they have a manner of which to get this done better and do that.
And Jesse, it's
ahead,
frustrating. No, I was just going to say, because I'm getting near time-wise here, but it's frustrating that leading up to 2024, there are a lot of experts saying, hey, you know, you're not polling well on immigration. This could hand Trump the White House back again. And look at what happened. I mean, it's not like Jesse, nobody told him this. They knew this. They knew.
No, they knew this. But they, again, I still don't understand. And for me personally,
yeah,
I don't want to be a person who talks about conspiracies. But
yeah.
it seems conspiracy-like that,
sure.
that you would know what you need to do, but still don't do it.
Yeah.
It seems somewhat ridiculous. And because it seems so ridiculous, you got a lot of people disenfranchised, a lot of people disillusioned, a lot of people believing that their votes just don't count.
Precisely.
And we've got to get past that and get to a place where, again, we have to conform some of these ideals about abortion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a far rightist.
Okay.
I feel like everything should have limits. And I thank you for your time. And I thank
All
you
right.
for being able to speak.
Jesse, thank you. Always good to hear from you. Appreciate it. I mean, yeah, even on the abortion thing now, you see where Massachusetts and Governor Maura Healey up to our north just signed a bill where I believe Massachusetts now becomes the I think it's the 10th state that basically allows abortion up to the moment of birth. Now, was that a partisan thing? I mean, that's a little, doesn't that bother people a little bit? But again, the minute you criticize it, oh, you're a MAGA or you don't stand with women. So these labels, these labels just continue to kill us. Yes, and speaking of the voices, we have on here regularly Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media senior columnist and editor. Mr. Haar, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm driving. I hope it doesn't flip over to my car speaker. I don't like that as much.
All right. Now, just two hands on the wheel, 10 o'clock and 2 o'clock, and we'll be all good. Now, let's get to our copious list of stuff.
Is that when I'm supposed to take a nap, or is that when I'm driving?
The primaries, I'm all for going to June. People are saying August is, and maybe it's not completely because of the low turnout numbers. But I don't know, Dan, how do you feel about this? Do we leave them where they are? Do we go to September? Do we back them up to June? What are your thoughts here?
I would favor September, because the problem with June is campaigns are already too long. And expensive. Of course, a campaign that where the primaries in June would give you relatively, you'd have to move the nominating conventions back,
mm-hmm.
and that means you're moving the whole fundraising schedule back. In the case of state races, you'd be moving back, and of course, you can only run one primary. You don't want to run two primaries. So for state races, Senate and House, as well as governor, you'd have to move the schedule for citizens' election program mm-hmm. back. So everything would have to be done essentially in the winter. And that's not as favorable.
Yeah.
So that's, I vote September. Here's a little known fact that I looked up.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't look it up. I was reading a biography of Robert F. Kennedy.
Okay.
Robert F. Kennedy decided to run for New York Senate, state Senate, in I think 1966, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
From the book. I don't remember it from living then, although I was alive. It 3 days before the nominating convention. Right. He put his hat in the ring 3 days
before
the nominating convention.
Yeah.
Which was something like 1 week before the primary. Right. That's how they worked in the state. Now, because, as you know, things were done in a smoke filled back room in those days anyway.
Yeah.
And so all he had to do was convince whoever the New York party boss was that he was the best pick for Senate. And I think he had to beat somebody famous like Moynihan. Don't hold me to Moynihan, but mm-hmm. it was somebody. It was another big name that he had to beat back.
Yeah.
And he did, of course, and history showed that he was, you know, the New York State Senator as a carpetbagger.
Yeah.
But the point is that it's only really in the relatively more open primary era, which is 70s, 80s, 90s. It's in the grand scheme of things, it's not forever since we've had these timetables. Something's got to change. You can't have 20,000 people.
Yeah.
In the case of Republicans, 40,000 people are determining a statewide election, either a governor or a U.S. senator. And in the case of Democrats, 20,000 people could have determined, as it happens, Luke Bronin got more.
Yeah.
But if he had gotten 20,000 votes, he'd have been the nominee.
Are you a fan, Dan, before we move on here, are you a fan of open primaries, yes or no?
Definitely.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I agree. Other states do them, and maybe
because I'm a centrist, so they open primaries move to the center.
Yeah, and I like the way they're done in other states. About 20 states do them, so it is something to consider. The Independent Party of Connecticut, which last I looked, they had 40,000-50,000 people, something like that. What's up with that in the governor's race?
The Independent Party will be picking its candidates for all the statewide races in the next few days, this weekend. And Ryan Fazio, the state senator from Greenwich, who is the Republican nominee, will likely be the Independent Party nominee.
Interesting.
And that's a little bit of a quirk. Most of the constitutional officers have put their hat in the ring for the Independent Party, except, I believe, Tong. Don't hold me to that. I believe he did not.
Yeah.
Most have, as have most of their opponents. Jen Tooker, Peter Lumaj, Wilms, Fred Wilms.
Yep.
They have put their names. So you're going to have competition there, but not for governor, because Governor Lamont declined to go out and get the signatures during a primary.
Hmm. Dan Harz, the guest, Hearst Connecticut Media. We have a nuclear merger. Talk about this, Dan, and possible consumer effects here long term.
Yeah, there's a lot of concern about this. That's Dominion Energy, which is Virginia-based, which I think it started out as Virginia Light and Power or something mm-hmm. like that. And they, of course, famously own the Millstone Nuclear Power Station, which is a big percentage of Connecticut's energy, and we know that we either pay or get a credit for it. It's in the news. And they are merging with Next Era Energy of Florida.
Yeah.
And between the two of them, they own some staggering 25% of the generation in New England. And,
wow.
of course, New England is a New England-wide system.
Mm-hmm.
So the fear is that they could drive up prices. Now, as you know, the system is designed to prevent that by having each plant, each individual power plant bid in, and everybody gets the lowest or the, I'm sorry, the highest low bidder. You know, it's a complicated system that I neither understand nor could explain. Long and the short of it is there are safeguards in the system to prevent the sort of strong-arming, but nonetheless not that many safeguards. And this is precisely what reformers were hoping to do away with when we said in 1998 and went into effect in 2000, we're going to get the Northeast Utilities, the Eversources, the NSTARs out of the business of generating power.
Yeah.
Precisely so that there would be competition in the generation part of your power bill. And now we're seeing less of that. And of course, that was predictable with the roll up of everything in society, you know, as we see with Paramount Warner Brothers.
Yeah. One final thing with Dan Haar here. Dan, are you at all surprised or not at the hue and cry, shall we say, surrounding these license plate readers? We call them Flock cameras. Flock is a brand name, just the way Xerox is a brand name. But are you at all surprised about this or not?
Flock cameras Flock as a company is going to succeed in unifying the far left and the far right in a way that no political systems have been able to succeed.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised, no, because there's something for everyone to hate, whether you don't like privacy or you don't like intrusion or you don't like immigration enforcement. You know, whatever in society you don't like, a Flock camera provides you with. And, of course, the company is now backpedaling like crazy and saying we're putting all kinds of safeguards. The theme of this discussion today is safeguards, apparently.
And
Flock is claiming they're putting all kinds of safeguards in.
Yeah, and the state has a law, right, that I guess kicks in, what, October 1 in a few weeks here? So Connecticut, didn't we already narrow down the retention in the cloud, wherever the cloud is, the retention of these things from, what, a month to 3 weeks or something like that?
I thought it was 7 days. I thought it was less. But what it is it's shared only in reciprocal states of, I believe, Connecticut, Massachusetts, New York, and Rhode Island.
And
right? so that's a big deal there, because obviously in the case of the Texas reproductive rights issue, that was a big deal that you would not likely see in New England.
Yeah, and finally, Dan, I know you were wondering. Now, I have had people tell me over the years I should run for the General Assembly. I said that's very nice. They'd be wheeling me out there on a stretcher 5 minutes after I was gaveled in. But we have a gentleman I know out east, a talk show host. He's now trying to run for the General Assembly, and against a longtime, very powerful person in that area, Martha Marks.
Hats off to our friend Mark Pazniokas at the Mirror. He had a terrific story about this. Senator Marks challenged Lee Elsie to his station, his radio station, to show the same FCC-required balance that everyone else has to show and give her 4 hours a day. And she said, you know, I could talk for 4 hours. I'm pretty good at that. And there's no resolution yet, as far as I know. I've been trying to figure out today whether there's a resolution, and I'm not aware of one, although he was temporarily off the air, which I know pains him. He did say in Mark's story that he worked, and this is not funny, he worked on the day of his father's funeral, father's death. To honor his father's work ethic.
Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media. Dan, as always, a good list, an exhaustive list. We thank you, and have a great weekend, and we'll talk next week. Thank you, sir.
Have a great week.
All right, Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media. A lot going on there right here on WICC.